This is a recording of the men's meeting with the speaker Michael M. from San Francisco, recorded at the California Mid-State Regional Convention of NA No. 2 in Modesto, California, on Saturday, June 27, 1992. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
From San Francisco. My name is Michael. I'm an addict. I got to tell you, it's weird to have you all over there. I don't know who set this up. I'll try. I got to tell you, I'm nervous. You know, it's ridiculous to sit here and or stand here and be nervous, I guess, with a room full of friends that I haven't met yet. I never felt like that was really true. I didn't come into Narcotics Anonymous thinking that men were my friends. If I had my choice, I would be sitting with the women, because that's where I always got along best. You know, what I've been about is not hanging out with the fellas. You know, is doing what I've got to do to get what I want. And y'all didn't have what I want when I got here. You know, sometimes you still don't. Thank God. But most of the time you do. See, most of the time I realize that I need to have a relationship with men that is going to help save my life. And that's real uncomfortable. You know, it's real hard to develop that intimacy with men. And I guess that's why we have these meetings. And I think, you know, my higher power's got a real strange sense of humor. Because I don't go to men's meetings. And this is the second convention I've been asked to speak at a men's meeting in the last 2 years. So I'm either supposed to get a message or I'm supposed to give a message. Either way is okay with me. You know, whatever happens. I guess I got to tell you a couple things about me. If they piss you off, oh well. If they don't, that's great. But this is who I am, and it's important for me to tell you that I'll have 17 years clean in August, God willing. You know, I've never been a member of any other 12-step program. I don't go to any other 12-step program. I don't read any other program's literature, and that's what I'm about. And that's my personal stuff, you know, that I'm not here speaking for NA. I'm not here speaking your story that I'm supposed to tell you about me, and that's who I am. You know, that's the basis of my recovery has been in Narcotics Anonymous and nowhere else. And sometimes that's, you know, interesting material. I don't know how long I can sit here with this jamoke in the front row here, my buddy, who's a hell of a good guy. And not laugh, because that's what we do best together, you know, is get in trouble. He's the king of the 13th step, and I've been taking lessons from him as long as I've known him. He finally turned 13, so he figures it's okay now. I don't know. I'll tell you, I'm really glad to be here. I'm glad that the program committee asked me to speak. I'm glad Gene called me up and asked me to come here. You know, I consider it a privilege and an honor to share in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting anytime, you know, and especially at conventions. I really love this program. Like I said, it's the basis of what I do, you know. I get a lot of information everywhere else in the world, but what I have to run it through is Narcotics Anonymous. What I have to learn to do is apply the principles that I learn here in my life, you know, and that's what I've tried to do. Sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. You know, I really thought that if you had 16 years or 10 years or 5 years that you were supposed to be pretty perfect, you know, and that you knew what to do instinctively. And if you had 20 years, you were walking on fucking water like Jack there. But that you were supposed to be different, you know, that somehow just having time would change you. And having time does change you. But that doesn't mean you don't screw up and you don't have character defects and you don't make mistakes. And learning to forgive myself for being human has been a real big job. I don't think most of us believe that we're supposed to make mistakes, that things are supposed to go wrong, that I think most of us believe that when we come to NA, once we get clean, everything's supposed to be right. And nothing should ever go wrong. And I'm going to tell you that that's just bullshit. That's just not reality. And it makes sense that I don't want that in my life because I have run from reality my whole life. You know, that's my first drug was, you know, escaping reality. And anything that helped that happen was what I used. And it didn't matter if it was a chemical or if it was women or if it was comic books or movies or motorcycles or any of that stuff. It never mattered what it was as long as I could get out of where I was. And that was the name of the game. Change how I feel. I think one of the reasons that I never went to men's meetings when I was newer was that I was always really afraid of men. You know, afraid of that relationship. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't instantly walk in and feel part of and feel real tight with everybody. I felt real different. I didn't have no tattoos. I didn't have a Harley Davidson. And I'd never done any time in the joint. And so I was sitting with a bunch of guys that had done all that stuff, and I felt immediately less than. Now that was a familiar feeling for me, because I had always felt less than, and I'd always felt not right. And I figured since you'd done all this stuff, that I was once again inadequate, you know. That you were such a success, and, you know, having all this good shit happen in your life, you know, getting to go to San Quentin and Soledad and all these places that I never got to go. That's the perverted thinking of a drug addict, you know what I mean? I felt like I wasn't bad enough to belong to NA, you know. Thank God I learned I could stay here. You know, that I didn't have to be all those things. That I just had to be me and get honest about who that was. And that was one of the first spiritual principles I tried to work here. And it was because I wanted to have another man be my friend. And I was in a recovery house. And there's always the dominant personality in any group. And here he was, and I wanted to be like one of the fellas. And so I would get in the bullshit sessions, and we were driving Cadillacs around the dormitory, you know, and selling kilos of dope, and, you know, doing time here, and doing women there, and, you know, all the stuff that you do when you're telling lies. And, I will. I'll keep right at it while you do that. And this guy said to me that he would like to be my friend. He kind of pulled me off, you know. He said, you know, I'd really like to be your friend. But, man, you got to get honest. You know, it's like, oh, shit. You know, he knows. You know, I'm lying through my teeth, trying to be one of the fellas, you know. And that was the beginning of learning about that, you know. It's probably going to be the last thing I work on while I'm here, is being honest, you know. I'm not honest in all my affairs. I would never even try to tell you that I am, you know. I still have secrets. I still have things that I don't throw out on the table. I still have things that I'm not proud of, you know. What I learned was that I was human, you know, and that it was okay to be human. And, you know, I don't come from that point of view. I come from, you're a man, you're supposed to be right, you know. Oh, fuck. I'm just human, you know. It's like a softening of who I am to be able to be me, you know, to be able to let down the walls enough to just be me. And to come in here and talk in a men's meeting, hey man, and tell the truth. Not talk the long shit, you know, not tell you the stories, you know, just tell you who I am, you know. Like I said, I got clean in 1975 in Santa Rosa, California, and I was in a treatment center, and because I was such a good kid and learning about honesty, I got thrown out of that place, which was fine, you know. I got about 5 months in there and got thrown out, and that was great, you know. Before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I would have told you, hey, Bob, that I was a heroin addict, You know? But it'd be real clear for me. I'm a heroin addict. That's who I am. I'm a junkie. And after I got here, I realized that it didn't really matter. You know, that what I used was what was in front of me. Preferably it was free. And preferably you had more of it. You know? That's all I really gave a shit about. It didn't matter what drug I put in my body. You know? And it hadn't for a long time. But I had that illusion, you know, that I was a particular kind of addict, you know? And, when I got clean, it was like there a lot of people didn't get welcomed in Narcotics Anonymous like they do today, you know. And so that if you weren't, you know, shooting speed or shooting heroin, you really were kind of like, what are you doing here, man? You know, maybe you should go use some more, you know, and you know, go turn into a real addict. And that's changed, you know. And I've been able to watch that change, because when I came in, it didn't feel like that, you know. When I came in, women didn't stay clean. People that didn't use needles didn't stick around very much, you know. And since then, it's changed a lot, you know. We've become a lot more of an inclusive fellowship. I think the longest identifiable feeling I ever have is, of being not enough, being inadequate, being basically wrong. In any situation, feeling like, I didn't quite have it, you know, all the way together, you know, and that somebody else probably had the answers, but I sure didn't, you know, and that on my own, I wasn't enough. And so what I always have done with that is overcompensate for it, you know, one through being real aggressive about my opinion and stuff like that, and the other by being real laid back and acting cool. You know, if I can shut off all my feelings, you'll think I'm all right, you know. And I did that really well. I used to be one of the guys on the wall. The wall was a real safe place. You know, the back of the room was always where I sat. You know, I had a sponsor who told me I had to sit in the front of the room. You know, I had to come to meetings and sit in the front of the room, sit in the front row, and show up, you know, and shut up. That was really no fun, you know. But I believe in that today. I believe that when you come into a meeting, it's your first meeting, it's your first 20 meetings, it's your first 30 meetings, it's your first year, you probably don't know jack shit about recovery. You're not supposed to. But if you're like me, you think you're supposed to. You know? Hey, we're talking about the fifth step today. Now, I've never worked a fifth step. I'll share. You know? And then I go on and talk about all the shit I don't know nothing about. You know? And what I truly believe today is that it's important to learn and listen, you know, and that's probably the hardest thing we have to do when we show up here, man, is keep our mouth shut, keep our ears and minds open, and learn something, you know, because I know I don't want to, you know, I want to have the right opinion, I want to be politically correct, you know, I want to be part of the mainstream movement, you know, and I don't want to make any enemies. I want everybody to like me. I want a lot of shit, you know. The reality of it is, what I really want is to stay clean. You know, and I think that somewhere inside I know that if I don't stay here, I won't. And so I'm willing to do about anything to stay here, you know. I haven't found anything that I won't do to stay in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I've had to show up at meetings where I've been embarrassed. I've had to, you know, make big mistakes and, you know, screw up my life real big and basically let everybody know about it and still keep showing up, you know. What I learned was that nobody could take my seat away here except me. That I was my own worst enemy, you know, that left to my own devices, I would run myself out the door. Left to my disease, I would be gone. Because it tells me that I don't belong here. It tells me that y'all are taking my inventory. And y'all probably are taking my inventory. And so what? You know, when it's the other way around, I am. You know? So what? I take my inventory every day. You guys are welcome to it, you know? But I was really afraid of that kind of stuff, you know, of being judged. You know? And today I'm less afraid of it. That's all. You know? Like I started talking about earlier, I thought that when I had a certain amount of time clean, I should feel a certain way. I should have reached a certain pinnacle of recovery. I should only act correctly. You know, all that kind of stuff. And and I was listening to Michael talk this morning, and I was just relating to how it is for me, man. And how it is for me is that I am just not perfect, man. I'm just not perfect, and it's okay for me to be that. You know, that the guarantee is not that I won't have problems in my life. The guarantee is that I don't have to use again. If I choose this way of life, I never have to use again. You know, that we guarantee you freedom from active addiction. We don't guarantee you you're going to have everything you want. We don't guarantee you that there's not going to be pain in your life. We don't guarantee you that there's not going to be joy in your life. We guarantee that you can stay clean through all of that. You know, and the people that stand up here with any time and tell you that, that's the message, man. It's like so simple. The message is that you can stay clean no matter what. No matter what. You know, and before I came to NA, I couldn't stay clean no matter what. You know what I mean? It took any excuse, got me loaded, you know, any excuse. And I was really willing to always blame it on you. If I had to, like, be guilty about it, I wanted you to bear the guilt, you know. I was married, so that was easy. I had a willing accomplice in guilt, and I had a running partner the whole time I used, basically. And that's what our relationship was about. I was married to this woman for about 10 or 12 years. I guess. And we had a couple kids, and we had a bunch of habits that we got together, you know. And we started off drinking beer out at the beach, and we ended up shooting dope in the garbage can, you know. That was the progression of our relationship. We went from one end to the other, you know. And thank God we're both still alive today. I guess that's a miracle, you know. So when I got here, I was really used to blaming people. You know, I blamed my parents. I blamed society. I blamed the schools. I blamed my wife. I had a real big resentment against my daughter because she came around at all. You know, I was one of those, you know, mental giants that never learned anything about, you know, safe sexual practices. And so I was a daddy by the time I was 18 years old, you know. And I resented that kid probably for 10 or 12 years for fucking up my life. You know, how could she come along and impact my life like that, you know? And her mother the same way, you know. Wasn't she smart enough to take care of herself after all? You know, that's her responsibility, you know. And I mean, you know, my whole life has been about abdicating responsibility as fast as I can. As soon as you put something on me, I find a way to get rid of it, you know. Oh no, you did it, you know. And coming to NA changed that. Not willingly. I just couldn't find nobody to take it, you know. Everybody's trying to get rid of their own, you know. I said, fuck, man. I need a victim, come on. So I got married again. That's really the truth. That's not why I got married, but I did get married again. I had a couple years clean. I got married. I thought now that I could do this, you know. I had a little recovery under my belt. I'd had a sponsor for a while. I'd gone to meetings for a while. I'd worked some sort of a program, God knows what sort of a program, but some sort. And I figured, well, this is what you do. See, because that was the program I was working. The program I was working was Look Right. It's a good program. It's called the Look Right program. Gary and I have been doing it for a while, man. It's okay. I'll get you, man. I guess I won't be speaking in Santa Rosa, will I? Seriously, you know, I really got into how I look. I thought that's what you did here, man. You got clean, you got an old lady, you got a job, you got a car, and then my first sponsor, he said there was one more thing that went with that. You got loaded. Right? And most people, that's what happened, man. They put together the package, you know, and the package looks great. You know, shit, you walk in a meeting, man, come up in your new car, you know. Got the right woman on your arm. Got the right clothes on. Got your hair cut the right way. You say the right shit. You hang out in the parking lot. And some people go get loaded. You know? I was fortunate I didn't go get loaded. That's all I didn't do. I did everything else. You know, but I didn't go get loaded. What I did by having the look good program was get farther and farther away from the program, you know, so that by the time I was 7 or 8 years clean, I was pretty screwed up dude, you know, and I didn't have much of a program. I had a relationship though, and that was very important. It was the most important thing I had, so I set about destroying it because it was the only thing that was successful, you know. And because I didn't have any of the other program, everything I did was okay. So it's funny how that worked. I was completely justified because I was just following my feelings and, you know, trying to get what I needed in my life. And I was willing to take the consequences of my actions. Now, the truth of all that is I was self-centered and self-obsessed. I was in lust like a big dog. And I was willing to take the consequences of my actions as long as they didn't affect me. That meant if my wife got hurt, hey, she's a big girl, she has to deal with it. I'm dealing with my stuff. You know, it's so simple around here, if you talk the talk and don't walk the walk, to get away with anything you choose. That you can manipulate and bastardize this program any way you want to do whatever you want. But unfortunately, the spiritual principles aren't manipulated. And you got to walk around with that shit in you. You know, so what I did was walk around with that stuff in me. And be real miserable, you know. And real unwilling to change. And I had a good time, too. You know. Part of that time I had a good time. You know. But I was real unconnected to how my actions affected anybody. You know, by this time I had a wife and she had a daughter and we all lived together. We had a family. I had a job. I was responsible in my job. I was responsible in my community. And I didn't give a shit about none of that. What I really gave a shit about was getting what I wanted when I wanted it. You know? And if I got caught, when I just used to say I would ride the beef, you know what I mean? Hey, you do the crime, you do the time. Well, my idea of doing the time was how can I get out of this? That comes first. Then if you really can't get out of it, you do the time, right? And so whenever I would get caught for shit, I would lie through my teeth. I would weasel and beg. I'd do whatever was necessary to save my status quo, you know, to keep what I had. Because what I had, all that material stuff, all that people stuff, was all I had, you know. The recovery that I had was based on that shit. And so I was, like, pretty empty. And I think the most important part about that was that I was afraid and unwilling to tell you that. So that's the bad part about it. It isn't so bad that I even did it. It's that I was unwilling to share it with anybody. You know, I was afraid that if I'd done this stuff, I couldn't be here anymore. So I just kept it. Finally, that didn't work anymore. You know, and I had one guy that I kept in confidence with, you know. And I started sharing stuff with him. And things started changing. You know, I started working some steps on it. Started coming back to meetings. Started having a real program. You know, it had been a lot of years since I had a real program. You know, it's so simple here to get caught up in a lifestyle and to go through the motions. You know, and so it turned my day, the best that it was I would get up in the morning on a really good day, man. And I'm one of those clean fanatics, you know, that the first thing I do in the day is take a shower because that's how it gets right. And I would stay in the shower, man, and on a great day, the best, I would go, thanks, God, for keeping me clean. You know, like I'm some fucking piece of work, you know, that he should be proud of keeping me clean, you know. And that was as good as it got, man. So that I was pretty much the things that I came in here. I was pretty much just like I came in, man. I was spiritually, emotionally, and physically bankrupt. You know, I just didn't have shit going. And that got old. I got tired. I finally surrendered. I didn't learn about surrender when I first got here. See, because I thought this was a program about drugs. Even though it doesn't say that in the steps anywhere, that this is about drugs, I thought that this was about drugs. That if I stopped using, I had gotten recovery. What I believe today is that when I stop using, I get to the first step. That's the beginning of the process. You know, that if I don't stop using, I ain't got no program. But when I do, I can begin to have one. And that part of that is that surrender. And the only thing I ever surrendered was using. You know, I thought that I was supposed to take care of all the other stuff. That I was supposed to control everything else, you know. And so until I was about 10 years clean, I never turned my will and my life over to my higher power completely. I really believe that this is God's work and this is Michael's work, and the two should never really meet, you know, because then I would be out of control. To make a really long, painful story short, that ended in a lot of pain, in a lot of hurt that I caused for myself and for others, and a lot of guilt and remorse, and a lot of inventory material, you know, and that was scary. That I was going to write this stuff down and share it with somebody was really scary, you know. But, you know, I had just about 10 years clean, and I hit a bottom that just kicked my ass, you know, and started going to a lot of meetings, sometimes two or three a day, you know, 7 to 10 a week. I didn't hang out with no one who wasn't in the program. No one, you know. When I got off work, I went to a meeting or a clubhouse or to somebody's house immediately, and I just stayed there, you know, because that's where I needed to be. For the first time, I was scared that I had nowhere to go. I finally realized I got nowhere to go. If I haven't got Narcotics Anonymous, I ain't got shit. You know, I got nothing left. This is what I have. You know, and I can have two attitudes about that. I can be eternally grateful that I have Narcotics Anonymous, or I can be pissed off that this is the only place I got to go. I'm not pissed off. You know, I'm really fucking grateful that there's Narcotics Anonymous and that I'm a member and that I'm part of it. You know, and that's what I did, is I became part of. At 10 years clean, I became part of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I had been on the fringes for 10 years. You know, I had been part of my choice and not part of most of the time. So Gary and I went on the road. No. Gary and I got divorced about the same time. It was a horrible time for all the women in the town we lived in. But we did our best to stay clean through it. So did most of them. When I got 10 years clean, I started really learning about myself. Because I started dealing with the stuff that I'd been unwilling to deal with the whole time I'd been clean. You know, I started dealing with my sexual obsession. I started dealing with my feelings of fear and inadequacy and insecurity and all that stuff that I just kind of put over there, you know. That ain't about shit, and if you talk about it, you're wrong, you know. I didn't go to many meetings the first 10 years I was clean and hear guys talking about, geez, I'm really looking for an intimate relationship with my sponsor or any other man for that matter, you know. I didn't hear about, I'm having a lot of feelings about this stuff, I don't know what to do about it. It was about, yeah, man, I'm really grateful. I'm glad I'm in NA. You know? And, man, I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel like anything was fine. And I finally got willing to talk about it. And the most wonderful thing happened, man. As I got more willing to talk about it, other people got more willing to talk about it with me. You know, it's like we're all kind of holding on to the bag, you know, we're getting, not going to share it so we know the other guy's got some, you know. And that was a good thing, you know, that was a real good thing, because I found out for me that I wasn't particularly fucked up. See, I always thought that what went on up here was unique, and I was the only man that ever felt the way I felt. You know, I was the only man who ever had any thought of inadequacy in their life, you know. I believed that because I was a man, I should know how to do certain things automatically. I should be the most wonderful lover in the world. I mean, that goes off the top.
I should be able to do mechanical things. I don't know why mechanical things, but I'm a man. I should be able to work on motorcycles and cars and build houses and stuff. And what I learned through talking about that is that people got to learn how to do that shit. And I never took no time to learn nothing. I just figured if I don't know it, I'm wrong. If I don't know how to do it, I don't do it. You know, I went bowling once in my life before I got clean. I didn't know how to bowl. I bowled terrible. I never bowled again. I couldn't do it right. You know? I believed that I was supposed to be perfect. You know? You know, to me, that's my disease. To me, that's that raging self-obsession that's at the very core of my disease. You know? And that's really the truth. You know? It's like, I was so consumed with self constantly, and still to some degree, that I can't see reality, man. I have no perspective about who I am. I haven't got a clue, you know, and that's where you guys come in. See, that's where people come in my life, is that they're my perspective. They're the ones who help me look at myself, you know. Sometimes just by looking at them and going, you know. Sometimes by talking, sometimes by asking, sometimes by just observing, you know, how they live their life, how they feel when you're around them, you know. And, you know, I try to operate on intuition and feeling whenever I can, you know. How does this fucking feel? Not how do I think, because my head's gone, man. It's like into competitiveness and fear and anger and who's bigger and who's stronger and who can kick more ass. That's where my head goes. You know, it goes into pissing on the fire hydrant kind of stuff, you know. But how do I feel, you know? What do I want to do here? How do I want to, like, become part of, you know, not be in competition? I always thought that you were supposed to be in competition, you know. The first 35 years I was alive, I don't think I ever met another man and didn't think about first if I could kick his ass. You know, how am I going to get through this one? What happens if, you know, it wasn't nobody threatening me. That was just my shit, you know, what was going on with me. The kind of fear that I live with on a daily basis, you know. And I don't have to do that stuff. You know, today I don't have to do that. I still do sometimes, but I'm not consumed like I was, you know. And, you know, I managed to learn in that process of creating some relationships with men that I could create some relationships with women that weren't based on what they'd always been based on, that were different, that were intimate and not physical. That's new, because I was always the opposite. I don't want nothing to do with your head, man. Please don't talk to me, you know. Let's just go do the wild thing and then we'll move on to something else, you know. I'll go hang out. I'll go watch sports. I'll go get loaded. I'll go do anything, but just, you know. And, I really treasure the relationships I have with women today. I have real good relationships with a half a dozen women that are real important to me and that I talk to, that I listen to, you know, that I feel are my equals. That's not normal for me, you know. I've always been either a less than or better than, you know, and so to think that I have equals is great, you know, to feel like I belong to something is great. I keep talking about results, but the way that that happened was through the steps. The way that that happened was getting involved with a sponsor. You know, I went on a great sponsor hunt. You know, and I had 11 years clean. And there was two guys that I knew that had more time than me where I lived, and neither one of them were acceptable for various reasons, you know. One had already been my sponsor and my best friend for 30 years, you know. 20 years we've been friends. And so I started looking, man, and I did, I think what probably everybody does that's got a lot of time, relatively. I looked everywhere else, you know. I went to meetings in other places, listened to stuff I didn't want to listen to, hoping to find somebody to sponsor me, you know. And, I found out that that wasn't what I wanted. You know, I found out that what I wanted was a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous, and then I was going to have to look harder, you know, because that wasn't going to be an easy thing to do. And in that process, I did get ask a guy to sponsor me, and he had a lot of time, and we just couldn't get together. You know, sometimes you don't click. It just don't happen. You know, you make appointments and they get broken, and you can't be there and he can, and just all that shit happens. But I, you know, I'd ask somebody, which was a big step. You know, just asking somebody to sponsor me was like, wow, I got a sponsor now. Wow, you know, I can start, you know. And I went to the London World Convention, and I met a guy there, and I didn't even know this guy was in the program, I swear to God. He was straight looking, you know, he smoked this big long cigar, man, he had short hair, and he had a New York accent, and diamond rings and shit, you know, and I was going, who the hell is this guy, you know? I thought maybe he was a non-addict visitor, you know. I told him this, so I don't feel bad about it. And I found out he was an addict, you know, and we talked and shared a little bit, and then I ran into him about a year later, at the 5 years ago at this coming World Convention, I asked this guy to sponsor me. And so I had a sponsor for 5 years, and that's unheard of for me, you know. I never had a sponsor for 5 years. You know, I had a sponsor to get clean, and I dicked around, this guy's a temporary sponsor, and that guy is a temporary sponsor. But I'd had a sponsor for 5 years, and we worked the steps together, you know, consistently, in a row, you know. The ones that we have here, see right here, these ones that say, we. Every one of them says we, it's a funny thing, you know. And they don't talk about substances, you know, they talk about the disease of addiction. And that's what I had to learn about. See, because I got over the drug shit. The drug shit was easy. But I'm 11, 12 years clean, and I'm having a problem living my life. You know? Because I have a disease of addiction. You know? And the way that manifests is every other way possible. You know? If it feels good, I'll do it twice. If it feels good twice, I'll do it three times. I'll keep doing it until it don't feel good no more. Then I'll do it until it hurts. You know? That's addiction. Didn't matter what it was I was using. Didn't matter whether it was women or work or guns or motorcycles or cutting firewood or whatever obsession I've gotten into. And believe me, I've gotten into some stupid ones. Tropical fish was good, you know. I lived in an 800 square foot house. Now, you know how small 800 square foot house is. We're all men here. We know what 800 square feet is. It's about that big. I lived in an 800 square foot house, man. I had a 125 gallon fish tank, a 50 gallon fish tank, a 20 gallon fish tank, and two 15 gallon fish tanks. My house smelled like a fucking aquarium. As soon as you open the door, you can smell fish, you know. I was just, had a hobby. So, it was just a hobby, man, you know. Everybody else I knew was obsessive. Why should I be different, you know? I decided I was going to cut firewood one day. A year later, I had a four-wheel drive truck, three chainsaws, a come-along, two winches, mauls, stacked the wood in my backyard, a thriving wood business. I'm not obsessive. I'm just trying to make a living. I just changed that. It doesn't matter what it is. You know what I mean? When I got single, it became women. You know? When that didn't work anymore, it became time for bottom. There was nothing left, you know. I didn't want to raise any more fish. And I didn't want to raise any more daughters. And that's what I was doing. Scary thing, man, to date somebody the same age as your kids. Oh, well. But I know, I really hit a bottom around that shit. And so the last time I worked the steps with my sponsor, as a matter of fact, we were like in the process. And I thought you could get through this shit quick, you know what I mean? I don't know if you guys wanted to get done fast and move on with your life, but I did. I said, well, shit, you know, I'll give it a year. 12 months, man, 12 steps, 12 months, no problem. Should work for me. It's been 5 years, and we're beating 7 to death right now, you know? We're really thrashing it hard, and I'm real unwilling, you know? That's what I've gotten to face this year. I'm totally unwilling right now, you know. I have to force myself to do everything, you know. I listened to Michael talk this morning about a crisis of faith, and I wanted to not identify, you know what I mean? I want it to not understand. I want it to not feel empathy. But the reality of it is that I have that in my life. You know, I'm unwilling right now. And my sponsor gave me some direction a couple months ago, or a month and a half ago. He said, here's what you need to do. You got two choices. My sponsor always gives me choices. He says, well, you could go to therapy. He knows I fucking won't go. He says, you can go to therapy. I'm already bristling. He said, or if you really, really wanted to work hard, try to work hard, you could come up with some of the things that are wrong in your life, and you could ask your higher power for some, you know, to reveal some stuff, and then you could write about it every day. And then you could call me once a week and share it with me every week. I said, I can do that. I told this guy 5 years ago I was willing, see, so I always say, yeah, I can do that. He ain't got a piece of paper from me yet. You know, that's how willing I am. You know, it's like, oh, shit. Well, I'm busy. You know, I'm really busy right now. I ain't got time to write. You know, I'm fucking doing service. That's a good thing. Doing a lot of service. That's good. And I'm reading all these novels. That's right up there in the important level. You know. I know when I'm in denial, man. I know when I'm trying to avoid the reality of my life. I read about 6 novels a week and play computer games a lot. And I tend to want to jack off. You know, like that's like, this is safe, this is work. You know, anything to avoid how I feel. You know. But what I learned was that the process works, even though I get stuck every once in a while. You know, I had a real hard time writing a 4-step around that stuff. I had a real hard time telling the truth about how I act out sexually in recovery. You know, I had a real hard time telling the truth about my financial fear that I live with on a daily basis and what a mess at that time I had made of my life. You know, I was looking at 13 years clean, I'm ready to go bankrupt, man. Now, you know, people don't talk about that in meetings very much. It's fucking embarrassing. You know? But through a series of circumstances that some of were within my power and some were without, I ended up bankrupt. You know? And I don't like to talk about it. But that's life. See, that's what happens. And the promise was, remember the promise? Was that I never had to use again. No matter what. You know, that's the promise. And so, like, shit happens in my life, man. You know, I've been divorced twice in recovery. You know, I've been in several relationships that have been painful. You know, my father died. That was real hard, man. I've got a son who's an addict. That was real hard. Shit happens, man. You know, life continues to affect us. The deal is I don't get loaded. Then I'm present. Then I can deal with it as it comes at me in the best way that I can. Over the years, it's gotten better because I ask other people for help. That's a whole new thing. Wow, you mean I can share this with you and I might feel better? Wow. You know, I mean, I heard that thing when I first got here, you know, sorrow shared is, you know, cut in half and, you know, joy shared is double. Why not? Fuck you. No, give me a break, man. I ain't telling nobody nothing. I'm going to show up, and I'm going to put a smile on my face and act like everything's okay. They told me to act as if. I figured that was good. That works. Act as if. I'll show up, man. You know, I got a good life, and I forget that. See, what happens to me is I get out of perspective in a minute. You know, I get out of perspective in a minute. I can wake up tomorrow morning and go, oh, man, fuck, everything's fucked up, man. My business is falling apart, man. My partner ain't with it, man. My girlfriend ain't acting right. And Jesus, I don't know, and this is wrong, and I ain't working the steps right, and my sponsor don't love me, and, you know, fuck. It's a huge thing going on in my head. You know, the reality of it is I got a great life, and I'm ungrateful, like a big dog, man. I'm clean, and I've been clean for a long time, man. I've never missed a meal, obviously, by the way I look. I've had a couple of years, probably, you know. I never not had a place to sleep. I never didn't have a friend. I never couldn't find a meeting. You know, that everything I need has always been taken care of. You know, and I forget that so fast. You know, that I've known people here for years and years and years, man. You know, I've known Gary for 13 years, man. I've known Michael for 5 or 6 or 7. I've known Ben for a couple. I've known Bob Berg for years and years, man. It's like, these things are blessings in my life that I tend to, you know, ain't nothing. You know, it ain't nothing. I had a real profound experience that made me grateful for you guys. It made me grateful for NA. It made me grateful for home and for connection with people. I moved. I lived in Santa Rosa for 13 years. I was clean 13 years in Santa Rosa. And I knew everybody there, basically. Anybody who had been there for a while, I at least knew who they were. You know, I was accepted at some level. Not sure what. But I was real comfortable. See, and I didn't know about this, but I was real comfortable. And I moved. I moved to Reno. And I had friends in Reno. I had a relationship in Reno. I had a home in Reno. I knew where all the meetings were. I got tremendous respect from the people there. I was treated very well. I hated it, man. I just hated it. Because it wasn't home. And it wasn't my friends. And I felt like a newcomer. You know? I really felt like a newcomer. You know, and it's real hard to walk in meetings 14 years clean and be feeling like a newcomer. You know? Really hard, because you don't even want to talk about it. Hi, I'm new here, and I feel bad, you know. Yeah, and this guy over here, he's trying to get clean. He really gives a shit that you feel bad, you know. He's kicking. And I feel bad because I moved, you know. So to top it off, I moved again. You know, I moved to San Francisco for all the right reasons. Money, property, and prestige, I hope. I hope I'm successful in my business, you know. It's not a bad thing. And I ran into Michael one day. I was having a hell of a time, man. I was just hating life, you know, and acting as if, oh, yeah, everything's great. Oh, I'm glad to be in the city. Oh, it's just dynamite here. Where the fuck am I? And I ran into Michael one day, and he said, man, you got to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and raise your hand, just like a newcomer. I went, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to draw any attention to myself, because then I may have to get better. You know, if I can go in the back of the room, come to the meeting late, leave the meeting early, not talk to nobody, not get any phone numbers, let alone give my phone number to anybody, you know, not acknowledge that I'm new in town, just like I'm anybody who might wander into a meeting, then I'm safe. I don't have to be vulnerable. I don't have to feel how I feel. You know? I tried to take his advice, but it was almost impossible. You know, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm new. You know, and but I did the next best thing. See, there's always two ways to do things. I got in service. See, because for me, service has been where I meet people who care about NA. Who believe in Narcotics Anonymous like I do, you know, that really want this program to succeed and want to be successes in it, you know, and so they're willing to put something back. And I believe in that. I believe that I'm supposed to give back. So I went to an ASC meeting, and I went, oh my God. And I thought, this is great. These people are just as fucking crazy as I am. We're going to rock and roll. We're going to have a little fun, you know. So the next thing I know, I'm a GSR. The next thing I know, I'm an ASR. The next thing I know, I'm an RSR. Here I am, you know. That's how it works, you know. And I wouldn't change any of that, you know. Most of the time, I don't feel like I'm supposed to give a lot back. You know, I kind of forget about that. But when it comes to doing service and it comes to people asking me to do stuff, I don't ever say no. If I can possibly do it, I do it, you know. I really feel like I've got a debt that I can't repay, you know, that I have a responsibility to see that there's a meeting in place somewhere for that guy that walks in, feeling like I did, feeling like he doesn't belong, feeling like he doesn't fit, you know, and that I'm supposed to be there. You know, I got a home group. I go to that home group every single week that I'm in town. I never miss it. If I'm in town, I go there. You know, it's the most important meeting in my life. I think it's the best home group in the world, and that's why I keep going, you know. I heard somebody say, if you don't think it's the best home group in the world, get a new one, you know. I like my home group, you know. It's been a place where I get to connect with people, you know. And I'm really grateful. I'm grateful to be clean. I'm grateful to be here. And I'm really grateful to be done. Thank you.